Accession number 20785 Reel 2.
Robert Keenan, Reel 2.
New one back here.
Yes, please.
Matty Austin was the driver. He was another Geordie.
What kind of vehicle were you driving?
Three tonners. Bedford and Austin, three tonners. Yes, the hard track was too small and for that sort of job. We came up, we came up near Brussels to a place called, I don't know the correct pronunciation, Gislingheim, something like that. I would pronounce it as Gislingheim. I met there with the first Belgian resistance. So I suppose we were still in an area where they'd been active. There was a Belgian nurse there. I'll think of her name in a minute. Lucy Demaray. That's how I pronounce it. She'd been working as a Belgian nurse with the resistance. I mention that because I met her after the war. I remember going into Brussels.
And how many of these resistance people were there?
There were, I should think, about half a dozen.
Were they armed?
Yes, they were armed.
What with?
Sten guns, revolvers. I remember there was a bit of a worry because these resistance people, they said, we've got some prisoners here. Would you like to come and see them? And there was a guardsman, Richards, I remember him with me. He said, well, we might as well. I said, well, I don't know. I said, we don't know these people. You know, getting into a car with a bunch of armed men and everything. So anyhow, we got in, I got in the back of the car and sat with him. And I said, I don't like the look of these chaps. We couldn't speak French, and they were all speaking French or anything. He said, well, not to worry. He said, have you got a gun with you? Well, I carried a revolver. I was shooting a revolver. I said, I've got a revolver, but that's not a lot of good. He said, well, I always carry a hand grenade with me. So I looked at him, a hand grenade? He said, oh yes, he said, I always carry a hand grenade, you never know when you might need one. So I thought, most peculiar. Anyhow, he said, if anything goes wrong, he said, open the door and jump out and I'll let the grenade off. But thank goodness he didn't. And we pulled up to this house and went in. I remember this nurse, Lucy Demaray, was inside, and when we saw her, we found it a bit easier. And they took us in, and they got some couple of men, I think, in the basement, and they got another Belgian woman who had been collaborating with the Germans. And I don't know why they took us there. I just think they wanted to show they were doing their job. And
were the two men Belgians or Germans?
Belgians, all Belgians, yeah.
How were they being treated?
As far as I could see, they were all right. They didn't have any sign of ill treatment or anything.
Did they say what they were going to do with them?
No. No. Well, we couldn't converse, really. I mean, you'd sort of speak broken English when you're in France. But I'd like to have known what they were saying and what they were going to do. But anyhow, they took us back to where we were parked in this field. Yes, I remember going into Brussels. I don't know what part of Brussels it was. We pulled up into a little cafe. And this must have been 7 o'clock in the evening. went in, had a beer, a bit of sing-song, very quiet area, there weren't many people about. And then we came back to our, where we were billeted, and that was it. We were sleeping out in the open, of course. We weren't billeted anywhere. Then the battalion moved up. You know, my memory beginning to go, I'm afraid. Where did you go from then? We must have moved up into Holland. Yes, we must have moved into Holland from that. There wasn't the fighting in Belgium. No, there was no fighting in Belgium. We went on. And the next thing I think I recall is being in Holland. I was still then with the Half Tracks. Had my 20th birthday in Eindhoven. I remember we pulled into Eindhoven, and there was we parked along the road, and there were about four or five school children came running across the fields, came over to talk to us, one tall girl. And then still my memory, Sophie Lubbers. I don't remember that name. They came up and somebody must have told them it was my birthday, because some of them ran away again. They came back, and they came back and they gave me a little silver shoe, like money box, and gave that for my birthday. It was broken, the lid was broken, everything. But we only stayed in Eindhoven a short while on the outskirts, and off we went again, because in Holland we seemed to be going from one place to another. Nijmegen, Tilburg, back down towards Eindhoven, Doorn, Venray, back to Helmond. We came to Helmond, that would be about October, I should think. We were billeted into private houses in Helmond. I got into a house there with a family. Peter Van Elten and his wife Marie, 55 Steenweg, Helmond, Holland. I always remember that. There was three, four of us, I think. I know I was in one bedroom with Arthur Bottrell, the scout car driver. And we've had a happy time there. Looked after us wonderfully. Elderly couple they were then. And couldn't speak the language, but didn't need to. We got on very, very well indeed.
How had you got on with civilians in Normandy and Belgium?
Very little contact with the civilians in Normandy. Very little contact. Most of the places we went to, they were rural. You know, and the sort of place where the men seemed to sit around doing nothing, and the women did all the work. You see women pushing big heavy wheelbarrows full of potatoes and everything, and the men just seemed to sit there and smoke and drink under the trees. That's the impression I got about rural life in Normandy. In the towns, when you went, were so crowded with British soldiers, you seemed to be in a garrison town in England. You had very little contact with the locals, really, because a lot of the places had been bombed and shelled. Went to Rouen, but didn't get much chance to look round. Khan was a shambles. That had been bombed so heavily. Contrast Brussels. It's difficult to realise Brussels had been in a war. Very difficult. Can never understand that.
So let's pick up where we left it at Helmond.
In Helmond. Well, we came out Helmond, I suppose it was sort of a rest place because we were doing parades and everything as guys' regiments do in Helmond. General Eisenhower came and inspected the battalion. While I was in Helmond, I was still with the half track, Gilbert Brown. Sergeant Major came to me one day. He said, "Keenan, yes, sir. It's about time you got back in a tank." So I looked at him and I said, "Well, yes, I think it is." I said, "That's what I was trained for." He said, "Well," he said, "you're going as gunner in four troop." So I said, "Oh, thank you, sir." So I said, "You see, you better go round and report to the troop commander." Well, I went round and saw that the tanks were parked just round the corner from Steenberg. Saw the troop commander, who was Lieutenant Hawkins, and said, "I'm replacement gunner for you." "Oh," he said, "can you shoot?" I said, "Well, yes." "Can you do this?" "Yes, sir." "Can you do that?" "Yes, sir." "Oh, well, we'll see in time." "Thank you, sir." So, rest of the crew, I know Bill Chitty was the driver. Clem Grace was the co-driver. They were both being at Rufford Abbey. Mick Brooks was the wireless operator. He was more or less a newcomer to the battalion. The worst part about joining the tank was I had to leave my billet with the Peven Altons, and I had to go and be billeted with the rest of the troop, which was just round the corner. That was a flower nursery, and we were sleeping in a bare room there with the Peven Altons on a nice comfortable bed and sit in the lounge at night time and chat and talk. But I used to go around and talk to Peven Altons every night. That broke up in the end. We were preparing for Christmas. We were going to have a big Christmas party. And I was informed that my name had come up to go to Brussels on a short leave. So I said, "Well, I don't want to go to Brussels on short leave." I said, I want to go with the troop. I didn't really want to go to Brussels because I knew the tanks were going to move. The Battle of the Bulge had taken place and we were going down that area. And I wanted to go with the tanks. Anyhow, they said, "No, you've got to go on this leave." So off we went. We went on a truck, and I remember being on a truck, that chap's with me. We were supposed to go to Brussels in the early morning, which we set off early morning, and get to Brussels in the afternoon, have two nights in Brussels. But we got caught up in a terrific convoy of lorries going into Holland. It meant we didn't get into Brussels till early evening. Billeted in a private house. Too late, really, to do anything that night to go into Brussels centre. But we went into Brussels the next day, and as I said before, you wouldn't think Brussels had been in the war. The big store there, Bon Marsh, that was open. You had the money, the goods were there. And there were chaps on the streets selling black market stuff. Spivs, as we used to call them. Buy watches, jewelry, bottles of whiskey. If you want to, you had the money, you could buy it. I remember going out that night, and I think we went to a greyhound race meeting. Never been to greyhounds before in my life, and still remember that as a very pokey little indoor track. Came back, got back to our billet the next morning, a long journey back by truck, back to join our unit. When I got to, I think we stopped en route, spent the night in an old schoolroom. Remember that freezing cold, the snow was falling, it was icy cold. Resumed the journey, I think, next day. Finished up in, there was a big school just outside Maastricht. Joined our unit back there. Freezing cold, horrible. We built it in the school lying on the floor, very little heating. Tanks were parked round the corner by this field. And outside the windows of the school, all the soft vehicles, the lorries and that, were backed up against the school. Joined my tank crew that night. Slept down on the floor. Next morning, Christmas morning, I think it was, there'd been an alert that German paratroops were dropping near Maastricht. So we were given boxes of hand grenades, the prime, I don't know what they wanted us the prime hand grenades for. I mean, we were a tank unit, but they brought these grenades and we had to prime all these grenades. We were in the upper room, and downstairs all of a sudden there was such an explosion. Went off and everybody sort of, you know, what the hell's happened, what the hell's happened here? So eventually we found out that downstairs the chaps in the room had been priming grenades, and Sergeant Lowe had picked one of the hand grenades up and was either going to put the detonator in, and it was smoking, picked it up smoking. He ran to the window to throw it out. Of course, when he got there, he realised all the petrol trucks were there and what would happen if they threw the grenade. Tried to come back and take it out the back way, and it went off in his hand. And he lost at least one leg in his arms. Several of the other ones were badly hurt. So that was a very, very bad Christmas day for us. We stayed in that schoolyard, and that was absolutely that was the coldest I've ever been in my life. In the field next to the tanks, they had a tent which was supposed to be for the sentries on night duty to sleep in. And I always remember New Year's Eve, beautiful night. Dark, a sky, a mass of stars, freezing. We had a tin of antifreeze outside the tent. When the antifreeze started to freeze over, we were supposed to go and wake all the tank crews up for the drivers to start the tanks and stop them freezing up. But that was frozen before we went out there. And you couldn't sleep in that tent. That was a sheet of ice. So eventually, I think when we were on sentry duty, there was a row of houses down there. We knocked on one of the doors, and whoever lived in the house let us go in the kitchen. And we spent the night sitting in the kitchen. But I don't think we woke any of the drivers up. I don't think it would have been very popular if we had with the drivers. And yeah, next morning all the tanks started up all right. So there was no harm done. From there, I'm trying to think what happened there. We moved on. I think we moved on to Schinveld on the border.
Is this still in Netherlands?
Yes. In the meantime, we had been detached. We had gone back somewhere inland, I don't know where it was. We took the tank there, and we were picking up some young officers coming from England to join the battalion. We did a short bout of training for them, for these officers to familiarise themselves with the Churchill tanks. I think there was Lieutenant Rob and Lieutenant Brooke. I think there was a Lieutenant Wallace King, a few other officers. We spent a couple of days there training them. And then we came back and rejoined our unit. Moved up on our own. Only tank coming back. We pulled up into a village held by the Americans. Freezing cold weather. Pulled into this village and said to the Americans, you know, can we spare the night here? And we found a billet, and there was a big hall which they were using as the stores. Spent the night there. During the night, or must have been that same evening, there was a cafe there, hadn't been bombed, and the Americans had taken it over, using it as a mess room. Took us in there, and they gave us a wonderful meal, you know, flapjacks and maple syrup, the lot. And we're sitting in there, and these American trucks pulled in, and there were Negro drivers. And we're sitting there, and we were quite content. And this American Negro came to the door, opened the door, and he stood in the doorway. And this big white sergeant, he let out such a yell, wouldn't know what had happened. And he said, you black man, you know better than to come to white man's mess. And we looked at each other and thought, you know, well, what's going on? So, clear off. Yeah. So he said, we don't allow black people in the white man's mess, which we found rather hard, you know, to fathom out that people could fight in your same army because we're a different colour skin. They weren't allowed to eat with you or get a cup of tea or coffee, whichever they wanted. We said to ourselves, you know, we couldn't see that happening in the British Army. If a Gurkha or a King's African Rifle came in, you would share out with you. But, you know, that was the American Army, I suppose. We spent the night in this hall, came out, and apparently those American coloured men had spent the night. They've got big oil drums filled it with wood, and they burned wood to warm themselves up. And they're still there when we left the next morning. But that was a sad episode, that, really. We moved on anyhow. We came to a bridge, and the roads were solidized. And we had to go over this bridge. We went up and up and up and got just to the crown of the terrific camber on the road, because the Churchill had steel tracks. When we got to the top, the camber got too much and we slid off. We reversed back down again, tried again, slid off again. And thought, well, what are we going to do here? We can't get up here. We put leaves on branches and twigs down, sand down. And every time we got to the top of that bridge, over we went on the side again. And we got down, we backed up again. And just then there was a big American tractor came up. It was a sort of big, huge six-wheel vehicle with a crane on the back. And we stopped them, told them what was happening, put a cable on the back of this tractor thing, put it onto one of the shackles of the tank, slowly went up, and they went in front of us far over, and of course with their grip of their tires and everything, they got us over the bridge. So we forgive the Americans for we forgive them for having us out there. Yeah, and we got back to our unit. Found out that we got the new officer, Lieutenant Rob, and he was coming in our troop. Very inexperienced, younger than I was. I mean, we were the youngest ones, and I was 20. He was, I think he must have been 19. And he'd done very little training on Churchill tanks. I think he'd done more on Sherman. So actually, I think he should have gone to the 1st Battalion. But he was a good commander. He turned out to be a first-class commander, John Robb. He's still alive today. He lives in London. I last saw him in Southwold in 1947. Yes, we're getting on now. We moved up to the Dutch border, a place called Schinveld. 3 again, bitterly cold. Built it in this house in Schinveld, and we moved on and went over the border into Germany. Loud hoorays from everybody. We're in Germany at last. I think I missed a lot out because we did a lot in Holland before that.
In the way of fighting?
Yes. Yes, I missed a lot from Helmond. We used to go to places like Venray, Doorn. Bill Brown's tank was knocked out in Doorn, near Doorn, and Sergeant Cartwright, young Bill Neal, they were both killed there. We did a lot of holding positions in Venray, in Holland. Around Venlo. Yes, I missed a lot out.
Were you in any fighting in your Churchill in Holland?
Yes. Yes, that's what I'm saying. I missed a lot out. Holland was wet, muddy. As I say, mostly in after the Doorn and Overloon battles, which we lost a few tanks and everything,
did you lose any of your tanks personally in Holland?
No, we were very lucky.
Did your tank have a name?
Dettingen. Which is the last battle that the King of England led his troops. Yes, I've missed quite a bit out in Holland because Holland was... We did a lot of holding positions in Holland. We weren't actually fighting, we were just in position in case the Germans counterattacked round Venray especially. We moved into Germany. And I think the place was called Heinsberg, the first German town we took. Bitterly cold. Doing a lot of holding positions, you know, where you go and you would sit in one position and you'd be there for hours. And I remember one place particularly, we sat there and inside the church, Most people think inside a tank you're snug and warm. You get the wrong idea. You're hot and dusty in summer, and you're plain cold in winter. And you sit there, and your legs freeze, and your back's